This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
And afternoon. Thanks for being here. A very unique Inside Douglas County program today because we're talking to guests from Djibouti Africa Task Force Guardian, made up of nearly 1,000 National Guard troops from seven National Guard companies from Oregon and New Mexico. And we're speaking with Task Force Guardian Commander, Lieutenant Colonel Paul Dyer and Captain John McDonald. And gentlemen, thanks for being on with us today.
All right. Well, hey, thanks so much for having us.
Well, first of all, Colonel Dyer, tell us a little bit more about yourself.
I'm an Oregonian. I grew up in the Portland area. I went to Taggart High School, joined the Army, the active component, and did my initial tour. After that, I got out and went to Southern Oregon University. And while I was going there, I learned about the Oregon Army National Guard and the ROTC program, and kind of went from there. And I've been in the Oregon Army National Guard for the last 20 years.
Captain McDonald, tell folks more about yourself.
Well, I live in Roseburg and work at ODOT there. My wife is there right now. Hey, Cheryl. And I've been in the National Guard for about 12 years, 13 years at this point. I was 8 years active duty right out of high school. Started out as a private, worked my way up, and now I get the pleasure of being the head lawyer for Task Force Guardian.
So, Colonel Dyer, you've got more of a connection, too, to Roseburg from some time in the past with Charlie Company, right?
I did. I commanded Charlie Company around 2008, and I had the pleasure of taking them to Hokkaido, Japan. It's probably one of my fondest times in the National Guard. I think anyone's first company command is one that they'll never forget, and it's also where I met Captain McDonald as well.
We've got about 100 folks from the Roseburg area, from Douglas County, as part of this group of 1,000 folks. How are things going for everybody over in Africa right now?
Things are going extremely well. The soldiers are motivated. They have a task, a strong sense of task and purpose, and they wake up every day, and they chip away at it. I think that the folks back home could be extremely proud of what their soldiers are doing here, specifically those 100 folks from the Douglas County area.
And John, talk more about how things are going over there from your perspective.
You know, they're good. Like Colonel Dyer said, everyone's motivated, wanted to do a good job. You know, one of the great things, you know, things here are, frankly, they're kind of the way they are back home. Some social distancing, we're taking precautions, but thankfully, we are the security element, and that's one mission that doesn't go away. So we can get up, we know we have something to do, and we do the best to do that job every single day we're here. So having that, it doesn't leave a lot of downtime to get complacent or to lose sight of what you're supposed to be doing while you're here.
And when did the group get to Africa? Now, did you go directly from Roseburg or for the other folks from their homes to Africa, or were you somewhere in the middle? How does it all work?
A little bit of both. So what we traditionally do is we do some home station training. A lot of it's done in Southern Oregon, and then we also go to Camp Rylea, Oregon, up there in Astoria. We do some ranges and some basic soldier tasks. And then we go to Fort Bliss, Texas, and there we do some validation with the active component in First Army. There is where we linked up with our New Mexico sister battalion, and they made up the second half of the task force. We did some joint training there. We were validated, and then from there we came to Djibouti.
When will you be starting to make your way back to the U.S.?
Well, tentatively, it's a 9-month deployment, and that's the glide path that we're on. Even with some of the restrictions and the things that are going on, but as of right now, we're still tentatively planning to come back in August.
And for the Charlie Company soldiers in particular, I know there's a lot of things you can't talk about, but kind of give folks an overall perspective about what your mission is for the group over there.
Well, our overall mission is to work with the nations of the Horn of Africa and really promote regional stability and protect the interests of the United States. We do this by working with our national partners in Djibouti, Kenya, Somalia, and counter violent extremist organizations like Al-Shabaab. And really, those are our key key tasks here.
So there's probably no such thing as a typical day then, or is there?
Well, I think there, you know, that's a great question. There is some routine that soldiers fall into, and that's a good thing. Routine and enables soldiers to understand what's ahead of them and to practice what they need to be doing. Predictability is always good for a guard force, but then also, as Cap McDonald talked about, you know, complacency is also one of the number one things that we can combat every day. So it's a mixture of both. I would say that's where we're at.
John, you want to expound on that?
Well, one of the key things we do is we provide security for United States forces and facilities and activities throughout the Horn of Africa and sometimes beyond if we're called to do so. So we're trained to do a lot of different things. When we arrived, we also linked up with an active duty company, and we provide not just the security, but we also are capable of responding to any contingency that might happen in the continent of Africa. So making sure our soldiers are trained and ready to do whatever they're called to do takes up a significant portion of our time. Not just the planning, but making sure that they have the skills, even simple things like that they're up on their shots or that they have their paperwork ready in case they need to go somewhere at a moment's notice. It's just that constant preparation and training, in addition to having the more standard day in, day out of our security missions, our standard security missions throughout the Horn of Africa.
When I've talked to past Charlie Company members who served in, you know, the past few years, maybe even a decade ago, and they talk about some of the places they went and what it was like, because you had the focus, you had the things that you were working on, but at the same time, in the back of your head, or especially during your downtime, you're thinking about Roseburg and your family and your friends and your day job and things like that. What's that like when you're over there?
You know, it's funny. We have a pretty solid workload. I'd say most soldiers work probably anywhere from 60 to 8 hours a week. But we have Wi-Fi. We have a lot of things that are available to us, a lot of options for staying in touch that, you know, our Vietnam veteran friends, our World War II veteran friends, Korean War veteran friends did not have available to them. Wi-Fi, video chat, we can write letters. Even with social distancing, we're still getting our mail. Right? We get care packages from home. So it makes it a lot easier than it was in the past to stay in touch with family and friends and loved ones, let them know how you're doing. They can let you know how they're doing. Honestly, sometimes maybe a little bit too much. You know, you get sucked into what's going on there. Did your child get the homework in on time? So it makes for an interesting dynamic and something we're constantly kind of adjusting to. You know, for example, last Christmas, I did a video chat. I watched my daughter open her presents. And it was a wonderful, beautiful experience, but also very frustrating because it makes you want to be home that much more. So as wonderful as these tools are, and we make sure our soldiers have every opportunity to take advantage of those tools to stay in touch, we also, you know, try to keep in mind that a tool can only take you so far.
Wow. And I was just thinking about the differences, as both of you mentioned, what it's like now versus past conflicts. And some of the folks I've talked to from the Vietnam era, who might in some cases, depending on where they were and security issues and transportation issues, might not hear from family or friends for months even. And so this is definitely different, but probably positive and negative, and just a different situation now to be able to communicate more.
Yeah, no, I think Cap McDonald hit it right on. There's pros and cons to it. I'm trying to think here. I'm one of my first deployments, I remember going into call centers, having to patch through and wait for an operator to patch me through, and I'd get there, and there'd be like a 6 to 10 second delay in the conversation, and you would have like maybe 5 minutes call, and then you'd have to hang up, and then maybe you would get the call again, you know, in 3 or 4 weeks. And then I've also been, you know, deployed in austere environments where there just is no phones at all, and you just write letters. So there's definitely, it's a changing dynamic for the soldiers of today. But I think it's good. I think it really helps morale. It enables soldiers to communicate with their families what's going on here, and then also for families to be able to communicate with their soldiers of what's going on back home.
You know, it's amazing, too, the creativity our soldiers and our families have in staying in touch. One family sent their soldier a copy of half of a Battleship game. So they'll sit on video chat. He'll have his copy, and they'll play Battleship over video chat. In other games, he said his wife once took his tripod and her phone into a restaurant with her. They had a date night. Her food was probably a lot better than his was, but, you know, they had a nice chat like he was back at home. It was really, really sweet.
Wow. So a lot of people, the continent they've least been likely to travel to is the one you're in. Tell us about Africa.
Well, I would fall into that same category. You know, most of my experience has been in CENTCOM, you know, specifically in Afghanistan. Coming here, it is a whole new world. Djibouti, Camp Le Minier is traditionally, it was a navy. It was originally a French Foreign Legion post years and years ago, and then it became a U.S. Navy installation. And I would say one of the unique things here, it's a true joint environment. It's the first time a lot of our soldiers, include myself, have a lot of exposure to Air Force and Navy personnel, and really working in that joint environment. I would say Djibouti is extremely hot and humid. I would say the humidity is what makes it different than Afghanistan or Iraq. We also have soldiers down in Somalia and Kenya as well, and so. I would say, in going to all three of those different places, they're all kind of different, and they all kind of have their own uniqueness across the board.
You talked about the temperatures when you say hot. Just how hot are we talking for that area?
I think right now it's in the high 80s, but with the humidity, it feels like high 90s. During the summer, it'll get up into the 120s, even a little hotter down south.
Wow. Now, you mentioned dealing with the social distancing and some of the things over there. I was curious about that as we got ready for the interview because I really didn't know what was going on there. The U.S. dealing with COVID-19 in various ways and various restrictions and social distancing and all of that. How does this impact both of you and the troops that are serving over there right now?
Well, it's definitely something that we take very seriously. It's something that Task Force Guardian, specifically myself and my Sergeant Major and my staff, echo with the base commander says here. And it starts with social distancing and being responsible at the individual level. Now, of course, there's certain things that we have to do. You know, we have to man towers. We have to man gates. But as far as, like, the dining facilities, you know, we have tape on the ground that keeps us, it reminds us to stay 6 feet apart from each other. We did close down the gyms temporarily, but then we also kept a lot of our outdoor turf fields open for soldiers to work out and do things in the open air and where there's able to have distance between each other. The big thing for me, which I think it's the, you know, as a task force commander, it's awesome in a way to watch and empower my younger leaders because at the squad and team levels, it's really given those young NCOs and leaders the ability to lead their squads and to have a problem set and to think it through and how they're going to accomplish things like working out, how they're going to get their mission done, how they're going to eat, you know, how it really causes them to think. And that's one of the things that, you know, that makes our military so unique is that we empower our junior leaders to make decisions and to action that. So there's a lot of trust that goes on. We do social distance. We have disinfecting teams that go around. We have the best medical doctors. We have a surgeon that's assigned to the task force. I have PAs. I have medics. Really, I feel extremely supported across the board.
Captain John McDonald, tell us talk about the folks from Charlie Company that are there specifically. What kind of age range, what kind of background do we have with those from this area that are serving with you?
You know, a lot of the soldiers tend to be younger, but compared to their active duty counterparts, they're a couple years older. So it's usually early 20s to mid 30s. Some of us, like myself, are a little older. I turned 51 this year. The backgrounds are the same backgrounds you find in Douglas County. We got people who they might pump your gas, or other people who work in a doctor's office, or change oil in your car, or work at Roseburg Forest Products. You know, and it just runs the gamut. There's a great quote from the Devil's Sandbox. I know I'm going to slaughter it here. You know, with Charlie Company, they are the bricklayers and the masons and everything, and they have all those. They do all the jobs that make our society function. And the one thing they have in common is in their chest beats a hero's heart.
What made you decide to serve in the military for all these years?
Well, that is a deep question, but you know, a lot of people go into sense of service, but really it's a sense of community. I kind of became a Southern Oregon transplant growing up in Portland. You know, growing up in Portland, I honestly, Southern Oregon to me was Eugene. And when I got down to Ashland and I went to college, it was just like this whole part of the state opened up to me. And I just fell in love with it. And I fell in love with the communities, Douglas, Jackson, Josephine, you know, all of them. They're all great. And the people are great. And I just thoroughly enjoy the community in the sense of togetherness. The other thing that I really like about it is it presents opportunities for life, for me to become a better person, a better father, a better friend, better husband, a better leader, better community member. And, you know, whether or not I'm going to Afghanistan or Katrina or, you know, the fires in Douglas County or, you know, whatever it is, that there's always something there can bring me to a situation that forces me to be better. And we get better together, just being with each other and accomplishing those tasks.
John, what about you? What got you involved in the Guard? What got you interested in this type of service?
At the beginning, I was trying to MPL when I joined. For the first time, right out of high school, was to be more like my grandfather who served in World War II. I just absolutely idolized him. And then when I got out about 8 years later, I was out for about 10 years. I went to college. And then I kind of missed wearing the uniform. And, you know, it was a bit of a rough patch as I got used to being in the military again. And thankfully, met great people like Colonel Dyer when I first came in. And over time, I've realized what it does is it makes me a better person. The National Guard demands a lot. You got to try to stay physically fit. It demands that you study. It demands that you constantly seek to improve yourself and be better than you are because you're surrounded by people who, if there is danger going on, they're the kinds of people who will move toward the danger so other people don't have to. And to be part of that organization, it really demands that you try to be the best person that you can be.
Yeah, I would say, you know, it's like a true family. And in today's world, as people kind of lose those organizations like the National Guard, the Rotaries, American Legion, VFWs, you know, those community organizations become so important. And the National Guard is just, you know, one of those awesome organizations. And one of the things I like about it is it's a great organization for young people. That can just get involved and then also be supported, whether that be through the GI Bill or, you know, paying for college or a part-time job or, you know, work experience or just understanding more about themselves. It's truly just like an awesome organization.
John, I'm curious, for you, you are involved in as a task force guardian, judge, advocate, and military lawyer, and yet that is totally different than your day job with the Oregon Department of Transportation. How did that all come about?
I needed a job, you know, at ODOT, and it turned out to be ODOT is fantastic. Lovely coworkers, wonderful people, work that you can believe in, serving the community just like in the National Guard. But I also have this law degree, and when I first met Colonel Dyer, I wasn't using it for the National Guard. He's the one who really put me in touch with the people in Salem and put me on that path that I'm on now. So it was kind of neat to come on this deployment with him and kind of close that loop. But it allows me to have a foot really in both worlds, another opportunity to better myself, to kind of tap into what might otherwise be some unrealized potential, and to serve others in a way that not a lot of people can do.
And you've also got the background, too, of spending time on the Roseburg City Council.
You know, it's great. And I got my hats off to them and the County Board of Commissioners. I read their newsletter almost every day, and I check the city's website, and, of course, KQEN, the news review, keep tabs on what's going on. And I don't think that the city or the county could have responded better to what's going on. I think they're doing an outstanding job, and my hat's off to them for that.
Got a few minutes left here. Colonel Dyer, what are some things for families and friends that are listening today or hear this as a podcast later that you want to share with them just about how things are going for people and about what you're doing over there?
Well, I would definitely like to share that they could be extremely proud of what's going on over here. Africa is an extremely fluid environment, and things change daily. Its priorities, the mission, there's a lot of flexibility that is required here. And a lot of people can be inflexible and become rigid, and then becomes challenging. But to be honest with you, Task Force Guardian has been up to the task. Like, one of the things I tell all my folks is just concentrate on being a good person. Be a good person, and you'll be surprised how far that will take you. And these guys have definitely embodied that. And I wake up every day, and I'm just surrounded by good people. And that just means the world to me. And they're absolutely doing a phenomenal job. I would say also that, continue to stay in touch. Continue to push each other to be better people too. And when I say that is I challenge all the soldiers to when they get off the plane, when we get home, is to be better than they left, whether that's financially, saving some money from the deployment, or going to college and picking up some credits, or getting in better physical shape or spiritual shape or any of those type of things. And I would say a lot of families and friends will be really surprised when we get off the plane. They'll see a lot of transitions of soldiers who really went out of their way to better themselves and their situations when they get home. So I think that's one thing that they can definitely look forward to.
And John, as we wrap up, what would you share with the folks?
Just that the work we're doing here as Task Force Guardian is important and it's meaningful. The security we provide and the things we do allow other organizations, whether that's the United States Agency for International Development, the United Nations, or nonprofit organizations, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, or what have you, to do the great work that they do, that they may not be able to do if it weren't for our presence and what we're able to do. And also, we're having amazing opportunities. I walk from one end of the camp to the next to get to work in the morning, and I might hear six or seven different languages being spoken, get exposed to a lot of different people from a lot of different cultures. It's just a wonderful, unique experience that I have the pleasure of being because I serve in the National Guard. And every soldier who is deployed here has those same opportunities as well. We have people as well who put together writing groups. Might not have done that if they hadn't deployed. Other soldiers, they're teaching themselves musical instruments or learning how to draw. We had a wonderful Valentine's from some elementary school children. So a couple of our soldiers who draw very well, they're drawing a coloring book for those kids. So we'll be able to send something back that can photocopy and draw animals from Africa. Again, it's just wonderful to be here. We're surrounded by great people, and it's a pleasure for us to serve.
Task Force Guardian Commander Lieutenant Colonel Paul Dyer and Captain John McDonald. Gentlemen, thanks for being on with us for the program.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, thank you so much.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team, News Radio 1240 KQEN.